Welcome to the Iron Wales podcast, proudly brought to you by Be Excellence, as part of our unwavering dedication to inclusive media. On this podcast, we shine a spotlight on the remarkable individuals who proudly call Wales their home, from visionary business owners to gifted creatives and all those who inspire us with their stories. We celebrate their contributions to shaping Wales into the diverse and vibrant nation it is today. So whether you're tuning in from the bustling streets of Cardiff, the picturesque landscapes of Snowdonia, or anywhere else on the globe, join us as we explore the rich tapestry of Welsh culture, creativity, and innovation.
I'm Sundas, I'm 20, and I'm currently studying law at Cardiff, but I'm trying to kind of get more in the creative industry, and my main thing is like poetry and spoken word. I write about everything, to be honest, because like for me, poetry is really like healing. Mm. The reason I got back into poetry is as a form of like expression and healing. But then I realized that as well through that, like I could be like a voice for the voiceless and I could raise issues about things like social justice. So I just started to like post things and then people would like start to tell me like, I feel seen, I feel heard. And that was like just the push I needed to kind of like carry on with that.
Yeah.
Like I started to like perform at like the protests or like events and things like that, and just the fact that people felt like I could express something through my poetry that they couldn't even like talk about. And it's like, even for me, some of the concepts I speak about in my poetry, like I haven't reached a point in my personal life where I can actually talk about it yet. So I think that that really just shows like the strength of poetry and how important it is to like keep literature and especially poetry alive, especially with young people. Like we're at a point where mental health is at its worst.
Yeah.
And when you've got like these forms of expression, and especially in like, we're dealing with so many difficult things around the world, like we've got genocides, we've got exploitation, there's so much going on around the world. So to kind of be able to have the personal outlet for me, but also for people to be able to hear something and be like, do you know what, I feel heard. Like, this is not just me. And sometimes, like, for example, like in genocides or like what's going on in like Palestine, Sudan, Congo, sometimes we feel like selfish thinking about ourselves, because obviously there's so much going on. Like, we don't stop and think, okay, how does this make me feel? Like, how does this impact me? How does it impact my family? So sometimes people don't talk about how it makes them feel.
Yeah.
So reading this poetry, and people have told me this, which means a lot to me, that like reading this poetry kind of gives them that. They're like, okay, do you know what? Other people feel like this too. Because people are often afraid to like address their own feelings in such a hard situation. But like, that's part of, if you actually want to make an impact on a really big issue, whatever that may be, you need to come to terms with your own feelings on it. Because if you just bottle them up, then you won't be able to have like a proper impact on these big issues.
Absolutely. How old are you again?
20.
20 with wisdom like beyond your years. That's crazy.
<Thank you>.
Let's just jump into some of your poetry. So which one are you going to read for us today?
Okay, so this one, it's called Missing Humanity, Reward Anything.
Okay.
What more must I do? Must I rip out my eyeballs and attach them to your eye sockets for you to see what's right in front of you? Must I shred my heart into tiny little pieces and distribute it to the world in the hopes that they will finally feel something? Maybe if I snap off my hand and attach it to their arm, the weight of wiping away so many tears might strike up a crumb of emotion. Maybe I could cut up little heart shapes out of my soul, bag it up and give it out like candy on Halloween. Maybe then they'd feel something, right? Or maybe not. Maybe they've gone past the point of return. Must I destroy myself to make them understand? Is the destruction of my people not enough? Now I must further destroy my pride and sanity in the hopes that maybe one day a crumb of compassion within them may be found. Don't worry, humanity. I haven't forgotten about you. I will keep making missing posters for you till your return.
Yeah, definitely. It needs to return. Wow, that was gorgeous. That was
Thank you so much.
Tell us a little about, you've got an accent there. Where's your accent from?
It's from Sheffield.
It's from Sheffield. Tell us about your journey from Sheffield to here and some of your experiences. Like, can you tell the difference in Wales? Is there more?
Definitely.
Yeah? Tell us a little bit about that.
So when I initially like came to Cardiff, I didn't really know like what to expect. I actually had like kind of preconceived view that it was like very white. I don't know why, I just didn't really think it was multicultural. So initially I only chose like Cardiff as like a backup option. Then I came to visit in the summer and I was so surprised. I was like, wow, there's colour here? Like, I didn't know this. And I just feel like compared to Sheffield, there's so much more like community here, and I feel like it's so much more progressive in terms of like dealing with issues on like culture and race and things like that. I think everywhere kind of does that, and everywhere like protests against these things because obviously they're wrong. But I feel like Cardiff and Wales in general has like a really beautiful way of doing it. Like it fights back, instead of like fighting back with like anger, I feel like it fights back more with love. Like for example, like what you're doing with this show and like bringing people on that are like inspirational and kind of like platforming like coloured voices. I feel like Cardiff is very good at that. Like instead of being like, oh, like you're not giving us this, do you know what, we're going to give it to ourselves and we're going to do it even better, and like you're going to watch that. So I feel like that's something that Cardiff does really well.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think you have to make the space, you know, the space, and even when sometimes it is available, it is never consistent. It's just for a moment until, you know, so you have to make these things. With Be Accents and what we're doing with Be Accents, we haven't been going long enough yet for all our projects to be embedded in the fabric of Wales, but we're working really, really hard because you have to make it. If you want to see it, you have to create it, 100%. You know, and you have to take action. And you have been taking action, madam, in lots of in solidarity for Palestinian people. You have been a little force, you know, you're amazing.
Thank you so much.
Tell us a little bit about what moves you. And I know obviously with the humanity, we all have, well, most of us have humanity. So I know that moves you, but what moves you into action? Because that takes another kind of step and, you know, another conviction.
I feel like for me, it's always kind of like being like a given. Like I don't think twice, like if there's a protest, if there's an event, like I've always kind of like grown up with the mentality of like having a voice for the voiceless. And like everything that I have today and like all the privileges I have, because I am Palestinian, is like literally at the cost of the suffering of my ancestors. So it's like, who would I now be to like come to this country where I could platform myself and actually have a positive change? And like I'd feel like a coward if I was silent. And but that's not even like just for like issues on Palestine, that's just everything. Because like you never know what's going to happen to you, you never know what situation you're going to be in, and I feel like how like life will treat you in those situations is how you stand up for other people.
Yeah,
and it's just like you said, it's literally just humanity. Like it doesn't take, there's no training, there's no like, oh, this happened to me, so I'm going to... No, you're just a human.
If it's in your heart, if you're a human with empathy and compassion, it's in your heart, isn't
100%.
It? I love the fact that you talked about your ancestors there. And I always say that you're the prayers of your ancestors. And for me, like my heritage background, my great-great-grandfather would have been an enslaved person and and three generations prior to that. So I think of them and I think, oh my God, like I can't believe we're living in Wales. We've survived, they've survived. And somewhere at some time, at some point in their life, they were praying for freedom. They were praying for a future. And we are that future. So we can't, we have to live on purpose. You know, we have to make sure everything we do represents them as in 100%. Some kind of way. So I love what you're doing. And I love you, the fact that you said that. I think without knowing you very well, if I would say, summarise what a Palestinian ancestor would be or what the kind of values, it's that immense kind of faith, that deep faith,
100%.
Deep conviction. Like I've watched it, I've been watching the Palestinian people and their faith for Allah and their, you know, the martyrdom and all of that kind of stuff is like, it's powerful in some ways and it's beautiful. But I also sometimes feel like, you know, is this... Don't give up, you know, don't just accept that this is what is meant to happen. It's not meant to happen, you know. How do you feel, what can people do and take from, without knowing a Palestinian person, other people, what can they take from the values of a Palestinian person and a family?
I feel like you like emphasized on the idea of hope, because I feel like it's a very Western concept where like we give in very easily and just like people, the littlest thing will happen to them and they'll act like it's the end of the world. And it's like these people are actually going through the end of the world. Like they have nothing. They literally have nothing. And they are still like able to like show love and like care to each other and they're still able to hold on. And I think especially when it comes to religion, like whatever religion you may be, like in the West, we kind of, I feel like we don't hold on to religion in the same way. We get like very distracted. And the fact that they still have faith in their Lord, like despite all of this, like people, one bad thing happens to them, they're like, oh, there can't be a God. Like, he's done this to me. But like, imagine how like strong you must be as a person. Like God's put you through all this and you're still like, thank you. Like you've done this for a reason.
Yeah. And I've seen the immense gratitude as well. You know, in the, in the worst time of their existence. And I know they've been through this many times before. But the gratitude for every little thing, and the you know, the collaboration, how they all just get together, and it's beautiful. They've shown a really powerful message to us across the world, haven't they? It's been a real moment of learning about humanity. I can't believe it's like 7-8 months. It's ridiculous.
It is, but when you think it's been 75 years, yeah. it's just more in the eye for the last 7-8 months.
Because it's on social media and we get to see it in real time. Yeah, that's absolutely true.
I think that's crazy because it's on social media. Mm. Like, this is how people are reacting and it's on social media. Like, imagine for the last 75 years, this has been like behind hidden doors.
Yes.
So the fact that it's at the forefront now and it's still like managed to extend to 7 to 8 months.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Do you have family over there at the moment?
Not anymore. Okay. Everyone's like moved now.
Everyone's here. Okay. Tell us, give us another poem then, or spoken word.
Actually, I'm going to lead on to the next poem from the conversation that we were just having.
Okay.
And basically, like, talking about like the kind of generosity and like coming together. And one of the like kind of values that my mum and my grandma have always like instilled in me is like how important it is to be a good person. And I feel like that kind of comes from like everything that our family has gone through, because like when you live in a world where like everything can be taken away from you in a matter of moments, like none of it matters. It doesn't matter like what job you do, like what house you live in, like any of this, it can be taken away like in a matter of moments. And they would always emphasize to me like, you need to be a loving person, you need to be giving, like everything can be taken away from you, but if you're a giving person, then God will always give back to you. And this next poem is actually inspired by them, so it's called "This Is a Palestinian Part 2 As you battle with the deepest loss you've ever suffered, somehow a small beacon of hope appears, a light through the cracks. She caresses your face and holds your head in her lap as you feel your worries slowly lift up and float away. A presence so comforting and pure, one that you never thought to exist. This is a Palestinian. She buries her pain in the best hiding places this world has to offer, for it is within her nature and those that came before her to alleviate the suffering of others, to compensate for no one being able to alleviate theirs. Maybe in this way, and in this way only, she can be considered a human shield. This is a Palestinian. Your idea of the deepest loss is the tip of the iceberg in her abyss of suffering. Yet she doesn't downplay your loss or disregard it. Her understanding nature knows no bounds. If comfort was a person, she would embody it to the perfect degree. How a person who has faced the darkest depths and evils of this world can be so soft and loving was unfathomable. They tried to put her in a rotting chamber, yet she grew to be the freshest fruit of all. This is a Palestinian.
And that all these poems are from your book.
Yes, called Echoes Among Olive Branches.
Why did you decide to write a book, or why did you decide to put all your poems in one place?
Okay, so initially, like, actually the first time I ever like performed my poetry in public was November 2023. Mm-hmm. I was just at an event and there was two poets that performed, and I was like, do you know what, should I just perform? Because like, it's not that I like didn't want to put it out there, I just had never been in a situation where like I could just perform right there, right then. And then like the kind of feedback that I received, it was a lot like more positive than I expected. Like, I knew that I could write, but like I didn't know that this is something people actually want to hear. And like after that, like a lot of people were like, oh, could you come perform at this, could you come perform at that? And then it kind of went from there. And then people would like message me, they'd be like, could I have like a physical copy of this poem, of that poem? And I was like, do you know what, let me try just put them together and let me see like if people would just want to buy like the book as a whole. So it was like, I think it was the beginning of the year, like I just started to kind of like put it all together, and then January 19th I just published it. I decided to self-publish because I was just like, I just want to do it myself.
And it's a lot easier nowadays to do that, isn't it?
It's very easy. Like, you literally just put all your files in, make sure they're all the right size, pay. That's it.
Pay and that's it. Good to go. I love the cover. It's absolutely stunning. Tell us about the image. I know people can't see the image, but tell us a little bit about what the image on the front cover represents.
So it's kind of like so there's this like quote that's like quite known. It's an Arabic quote, but like translated into English, it's kind of like, if the olive trees knew like the hands that planted them, like they would cry tears. And it's because like olive trees, they're like a symbol of like hope and resilience, and like they've been there for like thousands and thousands of years in Palestine. So it's kind of like the contrast, because the whole book, it's about like both the beauty and the struggle of Palestinians. So kind of like this image embodies that quote, and it highlights both like the struggle and the beauty.
Mm. Yeah, it's gorgeous. It's really nice. I love the fact that there's a story behind it as well. I know Race and the Red Card are across the UK, so I'm sure they're in Sheffield. But what was school like for you? What was your experience like in school? And, you know, tell us a little bit about that experience and the difference between Wales.
Okay, so growing up, me and my mum moved to the UK when I was 2. So, like, I was very young and my mum didn't really know English. And she was also, like, she wore a niqab as well, because, mm-hmm. like, that's very normal, like, back home. And it was kind of very difficult to integrate into society. And I feel like Sheffield has become a lot more progressive now. Like, it's not to the same degree, but at the time, like, there was a lot of racism. Like, there was days that you couldn't go out to town because, like, the English Defence League were everywhere. Mm-hmm. And they'd have, like, or they'd, like, post, like, letters in the letterboxes and it'd be like, do this to, like, a person of colour and, like, you get this. Like, there was a lot of that. It was actually one time, it's quite a funny story. I think my teacher, she told my mum something like, don't go to town because there's, like, an event and it's a bad event. That's not what my mum understood. She thought that there was, like, some kind of like event that like for the kids or something, so she was like, yeah guys, let's go to town. Oh. And we're like approaching town and we're just seeing like a bunch of like English Defence League, they're just like kill them. I'm like, oh my I don't think this was an event for us.
Blackster. Oh my god.
Yeah, thankfully it's gotten a lot better. Yeah. But like when I think about it, it's not that long ago. Like I'm 20 now. Like it wasn't that long ago, but I'm just grateful that like my sisters don't have to have that experience, because like we went past that.
But I mean like you said, it's no longer, but it's still happening even today, you know. 100%. We still today, especially with the world's attention and eyes on Palestine, I think as well. And you know, it's online a lot more, you know, those stupid keyboard warriors of some it's just ridiculous. And I see so many different comments, and the thing that really bugs me is when they talk about immigration and migration. Really annoys me. And my comment is, they are here because we were there, or the British were there, because I wasn't there, definitely wasn't there.
Literally asked people to come here. They were like, absolutely, please come here, exactly, and boost our economy.
Yeah,
please.
It's crazy. And I always say they didn't think colonization out, did they, very well, the long-term implications of it.
You guys brought us here.
Exactly. It's crazy. So I hate those comments. Really frustrates me, because it's the media narrative that they push. And Kim and I were at the WRU a couple of weeks ago, and there were this lady there from the Refugee Council. She was amazing. And she did a quiz with us, and she was like, how many percentage do you think, refugees live in Wales? And it was like 5%, 10, and 25. And everyone went for the higher, because the media make out that it's like a crisis. You know what I mean? It's like, it's ridiculous. And it was 5%. And every question she asked, everybody went either to the middle or the higher. It was, and every answer was the least.
Oh my God.
Yeah. But that's why we, you know, and that's in a room full of people on an inclusion day,
yeah,
who are open-minded
not
to this
even
stuff.
Like,
yeah, it's not like random people, but, you know, even people who are open-minded to this stuff, even they got it wrong, assuming that it was...
like, they need to always try to put themselves in someone else's shoes, because, like, a lot of the time, if someone's, like, a refugee here, like, they've gone through the worst of the worst. Either they've been, like, exiled out of their country, like, the government are literally trying to kill them, like, they're going through war, like, something crazy has happened to them. This person's gone through so much suffering to, like, even... They don't want to leave their country. They have to. They've gone through so much suffering to get here. And instead of, like, people being receptive, because I'm sure that if anyone was in that situation, they would, like, pray for, like, receptive people. Even if you break down on the motorway, like, you pray, okay, like, I hope someone nice, like, comes round and, like, helps me. So imagine, like, times than that by, like, 1,000 in these situations.
It's disgusting. And back in the Windrush days, when the Windrush people came from all the Caribbean islands, you know, and Britain called to the colonies to bring people here. The reason being, most of the British nationals, you know, white British nationals, took off to Canada and Australia because they were seeking opportunities. There was no jobs here. Britain was demolished because of the war, and they were doing exactly
what...
They
were taking all their jobs.
Exactly. And they did exactly what migrating people do now. Looking for better opportunities, looking to survive, you know. But they're called expats. And anybody that's, you know, anyone that's brown, they're called refugees.
Oh, they love to switch up the terminology.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
We have a different dictionary.
It sounds more like I'm on holiday. I'm an expat.
Yes, I'm an expat.
Yes. I can come back when I want to. I'm just, you know, yeah, it's ridiculous. It's, and language is very important, isn't it? And the media 100%. Use that narrative to make it seem like, you know, yeah, I'm just on holiday. And this pride, this British pride of I can go anywhere in the world and just do what I want, you know, is absolutely sickening. And, you know, really, they shouldn't have it. We shouldn't have any borders. And we should all just be able to live whenever we want to freely. But we can't because there's so much control in them.
That would be chaos.
It would be chaos. It's chaos now. Okay, give us another poem.
Okay.
What one's this called?
So this one, it's, the topic is kind of like changing quite a bit. Mm-hmm. But like just recently, I feel like my mind has just been like a thousand things, like from uni to poetry to acting, all of this. And I just like, I sat myself down and I just grounded myself. Mm. And I was like, do you know what? It's okay to like not rush everything. It's okay for like... I tend to be someone, when I have an idea, I just want to get it done. But, like, I've been trying to kind of, like, tame myself back a bit and be like, delay is not always a bad thing. So it's called Tug of War, and this is, it's inspired by me, basically. Setback, back set. There's always thorns among the roses. When you get pulled back, pull back. Instead of letting it reverse you, use it to catapult back. Maybe the reason it kept you behind is to wander in the forest and avoid the sirens. To be wrapped in delay is better than to be wrapped in funeral sheets. I look around the roads and there's potholes in the streets. But that doesn't stop you from using the roads. It doesn't stop you from reaching your destination. You're allowed to pause and get lost in the stars. Not everything requires an explanation. We're too harsh on ourselves. For a seed to grow, you have to treat it with care. Take in all the factors, but still allow it to blossom and flare. Even if it's stepped on, its potential doesn't stop there. The direction it grows in may change, but that just gives it creative flair. It's okay to be gentle. Gentle never took away from strong, and strong never took away from gentle. They both had their own stages, and from time to time, they'd make an ensemble, no matter what their age is.
Oh, that's lovely. Can you please share another one?
So, this one, it's called Boiling Kettle.
Okay.
Patience. Waiting for the kettle to boil. Maybe it's a cup of tea or pasta or spaghetti. A pot noodle isn't exactly lavish. The little things, yet they require patience. You can wait for a simple cup of tea, but refuse to wait a little to build a legacy. Even microwaving leftovers takes time. And if time is required for the minimal, what do you expect from the residual? Time runs, and you chase it, a rat race. But while you're busy fooling yourself that you're running towards it, it snickers at you. You're in fact running away. The hare and the tortoise and the hare... You're so concerned about losing it that you're neither here or there. And if time is required for the minimal, what do you expect from the residual?
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Follow us for more up-and-coming episodes as we continue to showcase the essence of I Am Wales. You can support more of our inclusive media work by going to www.beexcellence.co.uk. There you will find a link to Excellence Magazine and also our weekly radio show on Radio Cardiff. Every Friday morning from 9 till 11 a.m. on 98.7 FM. Thanks again for listening.